This week's After Dinner speaker is our military historian, Damien Fenton. Last time we had Damien on, he talked about the conflict, I guess the civil war between Russia and Ukraine. And he's going to talk about a war at about the same time in the same part of the world. Kia ora, Damien. Welcome back to Nights.
Cheers, Brian.
That was Ukraine, and that was before Russia invaded. And you said at the time you thought Ukrainians have a strong sense of their own nationhood, or at least a majority of them do, enough to launch or to work a pretty staunch defence of their nation. Turn out you were right there, Damien, or right so far.
Yeah, it's been pretty incredible, actually, the effort that they've made, and the defence that they've put in has just been, just been incredible, actually. But eerily reminiscent of another war in the region, the Soviet Union's invasion of Finland in 1939, also known as the Winter War, where a similar sort of situation seemed to unfold. Stalin, who was in charge of the Soviet Union at the time, thought that the Finns would be a pushover. On paper, the Red Army was huge. I mean, it dwarfed the Finnish army in every respect. It outnumbered it about 5-1. The Russians had 2,500 tanks. The Finns had none. The Russians had thousands of artillery pieces, 2,500 aircraft. The Finns had about 100. And his generals assured him that it would all be done and dusted in a few days. They'd be in Helsinki. And
what was the reason for the invasion? What was Russia, the Soviet Union, was it trying to achieve?
So for Stalin, this was unfinished business. This sort of goes back to the Russian Civil War and the breakup of the old Russian Empire under the Soviet Union. As a result of that civil war, Finland managed to establish its independence. Ukraine tried to establish its independence, but ultimately failed, and the Red Army crushed it. But they were unable to crush Finland, and the Finns managed to win their independence. And so throughout the 1920s and 30s, you had an independent Finland there on the border. And, of course, they're very close to Leningrad, now St. Petersburg, which is Russia's major port in the Baltic, major naval base as well. And Stalin really thought that he could take Finland back into Russian control. He also wanted the Baltic states back, and he also wanted large chunks of what had become an independent Poland. And he got nearly all of that when he made a deal with Hitler in 1939, the Ribbentrop-Molotov Pact.
Yes.
Where basically the two dictatorships decided to divvy up Eastern Europe between them. He rolled into the Baltic states. They really couldn't put up any more than a token defence. He took them. He was basically given half of Poland on a plate after the Nazis had defeated the Polish army in 1939. And then in November of 1939, he decided, and of course by that stage Britain and France were at war with Germany, so he felt that the rest of the world was basically distracted. No one was going to stop him. He decided he'd take care of Finland.
What happened?
Well, they invaded. Stalin was basically told what he wanted to hear, and it turned into an absolute debacle. The invasion was an absolute disaster. The Finns put up an incredible defence. I mean, just like the Ukrainians today, they fought with everything they had. They didn't give an inch. They inflicted masses of casualties upon the invading Russians. They were smarter than the Russians. They had better tactics. They were defending their homeland. They knew the countryside backwards. They made the most of that. And of course, Stalin had the Russians had attacked at the worst time of year. It was November. It was coming up towards the middle of winter. Temperatures got down to as low as -43°C, and his army was not prepared for that. Tanks froze, trucks froze. The Russians were basically forced to stick to the roads because they were invading, they had to all their supplies had to be brought in. So they were relying upon truck transport and horses and wagons, whereas the Finns, of course, were ranging across the countryside, including ski groups, guys on skis running around attacking the Russians, guerrilla war tactics. They'd isolate the Russians on the road, they'd sort of attack the front of the column and attack the back of it, and then they'd start to chop it up into little pieces that they could eventually completely overwhelm. division after Russian division got chewed up in that manner. And in a particularly famous battle, two Russian divisions got caught along a stretch of road, surrounded on either side by deep forest and swamp and ice, as it was in the middle of winter, it was in January. And the Finns chopped up these two divisions, cut them off, and over the course of about 3 weeks, completely annihilated them. And in the aftermath of the battle, they counted 27,000 Russian dead out of a total of 35,000 Russians that had gone in with those two divisions along that stretch of road.
What an absolute disaster for the Soviets. And was Hitler watching this, and was that one of the reasons that Hitler thought, sure, I can roll over Russia too now?
Yes, I mean this is one of the great ironies. Hitler was watching this with great interest, and he thought, well, if the Red Army is this bad, if a million and a half Red Army soldiers can't take out 150,000 Finns, then surely the mighty German Wehrmacht will just go through them like a knife through butter. And so he ordered his plans he ordered his generals to draw up their plans for invasion. Some of the German generals are a bit nervous. They knew their history, but Hitler assured them that don't worry about it. It'll be fine. The Russians, the whole place is rotten. We'll give it a good kick and it'll all come crashing down. And of course, I mean, on some levels, he was almost right. I mean, the Russians did suffer horrendous losses during the German invasion in 1941. And for a brief moment there, it did look like they were going to collapse. But they managed to hold. And then with Western support, American and British lend-lease, the Russians managed to hold the Germans and ultimately go on the attack.
And didn't Hitler miss one vital trick in watching the Russians struggle with the Finns? And that was how much the Russians struggled with the Finns in the winter? And the Germans were going to struggle with the Russians in the winter too?
Well, of course, but see, Hitler was convinced that they could do this in the summer. If he invaded at the beginning of summer, it would be all over before Christmas. So he didn't have to worry about giving, the whole plan was it was supposed to be over in less than 6 months. And of course it wasn't. And that's when, it all started to come unstuck and turned into a war of attrition, which Germany could never win. That was one of the big ramifications of the Winter War. The other one was that despite the heroism of the Finns, they ultimately had to come to terms with the Russians. They had to negotiate a peace because even though they fought brilliantly, they were eventually exhausted over the course of 3 months. In the end, the Russians actually did, unlike what seems to be happening in Ukraine, the Russians actually regrouped after the initial disaster. And in January, they basically started to pull back their troops, reinforce them. They put in a couple of new generals, including a general called Zhukov, who would go on to become one of the greatest Russian generals in World War II. And he reorganized the army and decided that they were going to go about this in a much more organized manner and methodical manner, basically brought in thousands upon thousands of artillery pieces and just proceeded to blast their way forward with mass attacks, which the Finns just couldn't withstand in the end. And they were forced to come to terms. And in the negotiations, they had to give up about 10% of their territory, and including some major towns and cities. So that's the downside, if you like, of the comparison between the Winter War in Finland and the war with Ukraine and Russia today, is that despite their bravery, despite their effectiveness, in the end, the Russians did wear them down.
But the Russians didn't take over all of Finland. They took that large chunk, but not the whole of it. And then when Germany invaded Russia in 1941, the Finns invaded too, didn't they? Why?
The Finns, 3 days after the German invasion began on the 22nd, on the 25th of June, Finland declared war on Russia as well and basically joined the Germans in an alliance of convenience to what, as the Finns call it, the continuation war. As they saw it, this was a golden opportunity to take back everything they'd just lost. And they did. Some pretty heavy fighting there throughout the rest of 41 and into early 1942. But interestingly, once the Finns had pretty much taken back all their original territory, Marshal Mannerheim, who was the leader of Finland, ordered the Finnish army to stop and not go any further, which really frustrated Hitler. Hitler wanted the Finns to carry on and help him attack Leningrad, and the Finns refused to. They basically took the land that they'd lost and said, that's us, we're done, we'll sit here, we'll defend it, but we won't go any further. And they pretty much sat on that line for the next couple of years. The fighting sort of died down into sort of almost trench warfare and until 1944, when the Red Army, which by then was well on the offensive against the Germans, decided to turn its attention to Finland, and they launched a massive offensive that the Finns just couldn't. I mean, again, the Finns fought really bravely, but in the end, the Russians broke through, and the Finns were forced to come to negotiation. But again, and so they lost that territory all over again, and then some more. They also lost Petsamo, which was their only Arctic port, and they had to pay reparations of about $300 million at the time, which in today's money I think works out to something about like something like $5 billion. In reparations
to the Soviet Union.
Yes.
Didn't the Soviets then think, it must have been tempting for Finland when Germany looked like they're going to win to take more territory. What was the reason they didn't?
Because Finland, I mean, they were, you know, they felt that, you know, they had no interest. They weren't looking to fight. They weren't an expansionist nation. This is a small nation. They really just wanted what they felt was their territory, and they didn't want anything else. They weren't interested in carrying on into Russia and taking Russian territory, you know, with Russian people that, you know, would never be Finns and wouldn't want to be Finns. They certainly weren't interested in any of the Nazi racial policies and all that sort of carry on. So they had a very practical short-term aim, if you were, which was to restore their 1939 border, and that was that. They weren't interested in a war of adventurism, if you like. Or a war to the end to completely annihilate the Soviet Union, which, of course, was what Hitler was embarked upon.
So after the Second World War, Russia has again, the Soviet Union, sorry, has made some territorial gains and sits down with Finland and negotiates a treaty. Now, one crucial thing is here, and you often think about it, other Eastern European nations, with maybe the exception of Yugoslavia, very much under Soviet control, but not Finland. What did Finland manage? And do you think that's because they'd been so successful in the war that Russia knew it had to accept that, because trying to take all of Finland over was beyond even the Soviet Union?
I mean, basically, yeah. I mean, yeah. Historians and have been sort of scratching their heads over this, you know, for the last 80 years. But I mean, it really does seem as if Stalin just decided that Finland was just not worth the trouble to occupy a hole and to try and put up a puppet communist government, that the Finns would resort to guerrilla warfare. You know, the nation was built for guerrilla war. I mean, they'd already suffered. You know, the Soviets had seen how the Finns could fight as guerrillas in the forests and the swamps. So he just felt it just wasn't worth, you know, he got pretty much what he wanted. He got Petsamo, which was the Arctic port. He got Karelia, which was the area around Leningrad, which gave him a buffer zone. It really seems as if the, you know, the Finns, through their military effort, had managed to convince the Soviets that they just weren't worth the trouble, that they were too hard to crack, and so as you quite rightly point out of all the other countries at the end of World War II that were occupied or defeated by the Red Army, Finland was the only one to retain its independence and actually emerge emerge as a democracy.
But
whereas, of course, the others all had communist puppet governments installed.
It had to remain neutral, and it has remained neutral ever since, right?
Yes, yeah, that was one of the conditions of the peace treaty. The Russians insisted that Finland be neutral, and although they also insisted that Finland was obligated to fight any invading outside force that looked like it was going to use Finland to attack Russia. Which, yeah, was interesting, but of course that never really came to pass.
Yeah, luckily but, not.
No, but yeah, that was the
Sweden
condition.
Sweden never wanted to invade Finland.
No, well, although it's interesting, you know, because obviously today you have Finland and Sweden seem to be working in lockstep. Back then, during the Winter War, Sweden, if the population had their way, Sweden would have joined Finland. The Swedish population were definitely on Finland's side. More than 8,000 Swedes volunteered to fight in Finland against the Soviets. And
really?
Yeah.
Well, that's a bit of a kind of a ripple that's come down with this Sweden and Finland now saying they would like to join NATO. How significant is that? That, you know,
huge.
After being the neighbour to the USSR and then now Russia, and supposedly we used to think Russia shared some of the Western ideals that we'd passed on to them once they got rid of the Soviet yoke, but now it turns out that this Russia is more of a threat to Finland than the old USSR was.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, this is the incredible thing, that the Finns and the Swedes see Putin's Russia as more of a threat than they ever did the old Soviet Union.
Do you think there's a sense of overreaction here? Because suddenly these conflicts have come back and people were used to this. Well, we thought we were in this new world era where liberal democracy was the default government, and maybe not anymore. That people were kind of freaking out a little bit?
I mean, possibly. I suppose it's always a possibility. But then again, I mean, if I was living next door to Russia, I'd be looking for a security guarantee as well. I mean, Putin has, you know, on the face of it, you know, pretty much declared that he wants to restore some sort of a Russian empire. And the old Russian territories, I mean, the Baltic states would definitely be in his sights if it weren't for NATO, and possibly could still be in his sights. And Finland, of course, remembers the Winter War, the fact that, you know, the Russians tried to take it back once. You know, who knows if Putin feels that it might be, yeah, I mean, maybe not the whole country, but there's parts of Finland that possibly they may want. Sweden, you know, fought a number of wars against Russia, all through the 16th and 17th and 18th centuries, right up until the point at which it sort of established its neutrality at the end of the Napoleonic Wars, which it maintained ever since. But the Swedes have also been wary. I mean, there's an island in the Baltic called Gotland, which is a very strategic island, can dominate the Baltic. The Swedes have always been worried that the Soviets and the Russians would like to take that to establish their dominance over the Baltic Sea. I think it's very prudent, and presumably you would imagine the Swedish and the Finnish intelligence agencies and so on have much more, you know, a clue as to how real the threat is.
Damien, we've only got 2 minutes, but there's something I really want to ask you, and that is, given we seem to be heading into this new kind of antagonistic situation where superpowers are once again openly and disagreeing. USS, the West, Russia. These are superpowers with nuclear weapons. And we have to be a bit careful here in terms of, as a human race, in the rules of engagement with this. It's all very well to say, let's join NATO and let's show them we're strong. But, you know, somebody makes a mistake, Armageddon can happen, even if people don't want it to happen or don't think it can happen.
No, I mean, this is the big difference between, I guess, between Russia today and the Soviet Union in 1940 is that Russia has, you know, the largest nuclear arsenal on the planet, and possibly more important is the fact that Russian military doctrine never recognized the difference between nuclear warfare and conventional warfare in the way that Western and NATO armies do. So the Russians see the use of tactical nuclear weapons as just another battlefield system that you use if you really need it. And I suppose that's the big worry, the unspoken worry that everybody's sort of watching now. I mean, on one hand, your heart really feels for the Ukrainians and your heart really wants them to win. But, my head kind of tells me that we have to be very careful that in a way, the more success the Ukrainians enjoy on the battlefield conventionally, you know, the greater the risk that Putin might resort to using a tactical nuclear weapon, which would just change everything overnight.
Damien, thanks so much for joining us again.
Thanks, Brian.
Damien Fenton, our military historian, back with another chapter in the history of warfare between different groups of humans. There's no shortage of chapters in about 2.5 months from now.